The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Welcome into the Brad Sessmatt Show, a very busy Monday without Mr. Sessmatt. I'm Jordan Hamm, filling in for the big guy. Brad was water polo dad in California this weekend, making his way back as we speak. And that's a vision I want to see. Brad Sessmatt, water polo dad, in the stands. What is he like? He's around sports all the time. I want to see what water polo dad Brad Sessmatt looks like. I want to also start this show off with a question. Am I crazy? And Eric, you can jump in on this. Might be a bit of a loaded question, but am I crazy? So.
Is that the question?
That's the question.
No.
Am I crazy? Okay. The reason I asked that was last night I was with the lovely girlfriend. We were going over some summer plans, and I have an uncle and aunt in Italy right now, so we were looking at potentially maybe getting out there. Return flight from Italy had 22-hour layover in Toronto. I instantly looked up the Toronto Blue Jays schedule to see if a game was being played there. Just so happened they were going to be playing the Yankees. That would have been ballpark number 18 for me. But she was looking at me like I had three heads. So in that context, am I crazy?
Absolutely not. If you're going to get stuck somewhere for 22 hours, Toronto is a pretty good place to get stuck in. And it's not like you're in El Paso. No offense to those people in El Paso. But El Paso is not Toronto.
And that was the argument she was making. But it's, why are we going to spend 3 to 4 hours watching baseball when we have Toronto?
It doesn't make you crazy. I see her point.
Mm-hmm.
Is she a seam head like you are?
No. Oh, God, no.
Okay.
Well, she enjoys baseball.
I mean, if you were like, hey, guess what? The Argonauts are in town and they happen to be playing, maybe football would like maybe get her.
Yeah, potentially.
Sway her opinion. It helps. To your defense, Jordan, they're playing the Yankees.
Yeah.
It's not like, you know, they're playing the Marlins.
No.
So.
Bronx Bombers.
Interesting.
Anyway, so I got that treatment last night, so wanted to get your sage wisdom on that. We have a lot to get to. This rundown is brought to you by Sagicor Now. Sagicor Now, protect what matters most. And I think the news of the weekend for Arizona sports fans is Cliff Kingsbury is starting to fill out his staff. Vance Joseph was named as the defensive coordinator on Friday. Bill Davis, the linebackers coach, he is a former Cardinals defensive coordinator and had that position as well. And on the offensive side, some of the position coaches are starting to get filled out. But the one big one that is remaining is offensive coordinator. And I think it's an interesting dynamic because Kingsbury has already said he's going to be calling the plays. So I think the offensive coordinator is just going to provide another set of eyes, potentially have an NFL background to help kind of iron out any deficiencies or any learning curve that Cliff Kingsbury may have. And the two names that have jumped out to me as potential options there is John DeFilippo, former Minnesota Vikings offensive coordinator the year prior, the previous season, was the Philadelphia Eagles quarterback coach. So he's coached Carson Wentz. He coached Nick Foles to a Super Bowl. And so he's got some background, and he left midseason with Minnesota. He was let go because him and Mike Zimmer weren't really seeing eye to eye. And mainly it was they disagreed on the approach of how much they should be running the ball. DeFilippo wanted to throw it. He has Kirk Cousins. He had plenty of weapons on the outside, and he wanted to go ahead and throw the ball. Coach Zimmer wanted to run the ball. I think that matches up pretty well with Cliff Kingsbury, if we know anything about Cliff Kingsbury. So there have been reports that they have interviewed him. I'm not sure when this news could come down. The other name is Ben McAdoo. Former New York Giants head coach. He spent 2 years there. The first year they made the postseason. The second year they went 2-14. I know this has been a priority for the Cardinals to get that coaching staff with some NFL experience, NFL head coaching experience. Vance Joseph, 2-year head coach with the Broncos, and potentially Ben McAdoo, 2 years with the Giants. So maybe they could help out with the learning curve there. When you look at the numbers for Vance Joseph, and I did some poking around writing up this story on Friday, Friday, they had the Broncos defense and the Cardinals defense looked very similar in 2017 and 2018. They were top five, top 10 defenses in 2017, the first year for Vance Joseph. And then in the second year, kind of across the board, they were right around the 20s, as was the Cardinals. But when you look at defensive efficiency, which kind of takes the offense putting them in a poor spot, which happened a lot with the Broncos and the Cardinals this past year, the Broncos were kind of on the upper third of the league. So this is a guy that has a background, obviously, with defenses, spent a lot of time under Marvin Lewis learning. He was the defensive backs coach and learned the defense under Marvin Lewis, then went to Miami before he became a head coach with Denver. So that's kind of where they're at right now as they continue to fill out this staff. Obviously, still, I believe that this is the most intriguing head coaching hire and how they build this and then move forward with the draft, which we're going to get to here in another segment. That's just very intriguing to me right now surrounding the Arizona Cardinals. Sticking with the NFL, we had the divisional weekend, and it seemed like it was Eric, speak up if you disagree, a relatively quiet weekend on that front. The games, it seemed like the teams that had the byes kind of took care of business with the exception of the last game of the weekend, which was Saints versus Eagles. Is that fair?
Absolutely fair. And I think the late game on Saturday between the Cowboys and the Rams was one of those blowout close games, as right. I like to call it, where it might have been a close final score, but LA was really never in jeopardy of losing that game.
No.
And as a long-suffering Charger fan, and when people ask me what's my favorite NFL team, I say I'm a long-suffering Chargers fan, and they kind of snicker and say, why do you say that? Let me just leave the example of yesterday morning in Foxborough there, and you can just simmer on that for a bit. And the late game was intriguing because Philadelphia had it all figured out in the beginning.
Right.
But the better team won,
yeah.
I think, in the end.
I agree. Had Nick Foles been able to lead that comeback, how soon are they putting a statue up in Philadelphia? Because you come in as a backup, win the Super Bowl.
Right.
The team started 1-5.
Yep.
And then Carson Wentz gets injured. He comes in, rights the ship again. If they get this one, and maybe do they have to get to the Super Bowl where there's a statue of Nick Foles? Does he just have to win this game? Does he have to win another Super Bowl?
He's such a likable guy to begin with. And he's someone that, you know his story. He was, mm-hmm. He gave up football. He didn't want to come back. Then he kind of got the itch, and then he came back. And we know how the rest goes. I'm curious to see what he does now, because I'm sure there are a bunch of teams that are like, hey, you've still got it.
Yeah.
And you have the it factor. And teams love the it factor. But football isn't Nick Foles' top priority. And I'm curious to see what he does now moving forward with his career on and off the field.
It's also amazing that the Eagles didn't deal him after last year. Mm-hmm. It worked out perfectly that they kept him, because he could have been the Matt Schaub from the early 2000s of when is this guy going to get an opportunity? They could have gotten
that's a really good analogy.
Some probably pretty high draft picks for him, but they hung on to him. Wentz wasn't ready, or he got injured again. And then they had almost pretty darn close to a mere season, except for a tip pass that went for an interception.
Yeah, and you feel bad for Alshon Jeffrey, because the reports came out afterwards that he was playing hurt, and he had a big game, and he's a pretty straight-up classy guy, apparently. I didn't see the post-game, but from what I saw on Twitter, he stood at his locker
like
or
multiple
wherever.
Multiple rounds of reporters were able to
answered all the questions, and you have respect for guys like that.
Yeah, so obviously a tough deal with that, but that now previews 1-2s across the board for the conference championships. You have the Chiefs against the Patriots, and then the Rams and the Saints. That will be next weekend, and I think the games we want to see. You know, the teams that are definitely kind of setting the world on fire. The Patriots are probably the fourth team on that when you think of top NFL teams that are killing it right now. They aren't really top of mind right now. They've just kind of been floating under the radar, which doesn't happen often when it's Tom Brady, Bill Belichick, and that tandem. So definitely going to be interesting moving forward. Over the weekend, the Suns picked up a nice win over Denver. And this is a team ever since Kelly Oubre Jr. came in, it's been just a different team. And actually, Evan Sidery of Bright Side of the Sun put out a really interesting column about, you know, this young team trying to find an identity. And the identity that they might have found is a defensive basketball team. And try to think of when the last time the Suns were considered a defensive basketball team. And I'm not just talking about the struggles they've had over the last 8+ years, the postseason drought, but even in the postseason, when they were 7 seconds or less, they were okay giving up 120 a game because they were putting up 140 a game. Defense was never really their strength there. But he put out an interesting stat yesterday. Since December 19th, that's when Kelly Oubre Jr. joined the Suns rotation, here's the running tally of games where teams reach at least 20 deflections. So not necessarily things that are going to show up in the box score. It's not steals, not blocks, not points, assists, whatever. The Suns are leading the league with eight. Eight games where they've had at least 20 deflections, and then followed up by the Thunder with five, and then Grizzlies and Timberwolves with three. So that's just making life difficult for opponents. And that's kind of what I was hoping to see when the Suns, were hoping to see when they drafted Josh Jackson. And Josh Jackson is continuing to develop. I think he's going to be a nice player. It's taking a little bit of time. But Kelly Oubre Jr.'s and Melton's kind of growing roles, I feel like that's really put the defensive mindset on there. And again, not making things show up necessarily in the stat sheet, but making life difficult. And I think that gets back to like the Sean Marion type, the kind of secret sauce that made those teams so good back in the day, the 7 seconds or less. You know, you had the shooters, you had Amari, you had Nash, obviously, but Marion was the one that could kind of break off and guard anybody and just make life difficult. Not necessarily have to get the blocks or the steals, but just make life difficult. So that's something that jumped out to me with the Suns over this past weekend. On the show today, we have Paula Bovin and Justin Spears of the Arizona Daily Star and ESPN Tucson. When we come back, we're going to talk Kyler Murray. There's a lot of interesting stuff going on with him. Is he a baseball player? Is he a football player? Is he both? That's coming up next on the Brad Sussmat Show. Tonight is a big night for Kyler Murray, the Oklahoma quarterback, the Heisman Trophy winner. He's also an Oakland A's selection, and the deadline to declare for the NFL draft is 9 p.m. Arizona time, 10 p.m., excuse me, 10 p.m. Arizona time. The only issue here for declaring for the NFL draft is, like I said, he's an Oakland A's draft pick. In this past draft, he was drafted 9th overall, signed a $4.66 million signing bonus, and part of that negotiation was that he could come back and start for Oklahoma for what seemed to be 1 year, and then he would go on his merry way, play baseball. Then he won the Heisman. And going into this process, I don't think the A's, I don't think really many people within the sports community, hell, maybe even Kyler Murray, didn't think that he would be put up the season that he did and win the Heisman Trophy following up Baker Mayfield, who did the exact same over at Oklahoma. Because coming into this, when he started as a freshman, he was at Texas A&M with Kyle Allen, where he was pretty much a running quarterback that had to split a job. He transferred to Oklahoma, and then he was Baker Mayfield's backup. So no one really knew what they had in Kyler Murray. He was going to be the home run hitter, but no one, I think, really thought he was going to do what he did this past season. So right now, he's looking at joining the NFL draft, but the MLB and the Oakland A's are making a big push to try to make sure that doesn't happen. And this is why I find this so fascinating. Right now, they're offering him this contract that he signed was a minor league deal, and that's predominantly, almost exclusively, what these draft picks sign. But a major league deal would then start his major league clock. And Jeff Passan of ESPN broke it down really well here. So he said, MLB rules prohibit players from signing major league contracts, which place players on the 40-man roster out of the draft. Teams are not allowed to sign amateur players to minor league deals, then immediately give them major league deals, because the latter would be an inducement to sign and a circumvention of the league's finite draft pools. All right, makes sense. In Murray's case, because he signed a minor league deal and because his performance at Oklahoma changed the circumstances of his baseball career, Oakland could be within the rules to give Murray a long-term extension if that's what it takes to keep him in baseball, sources tell ESPN. Even with a major league deal, Murray would likely begin his career at High A Stockton, sources told ESPN. So he'd be using major league money, he'd be in the minor leagues, and they would try to work his way up as quickly as possible. So why does Major League Baseball care so much about this? Obviously, Oakland cares about this. They have $4.66 million invested, and they used a ninth overall pick on him. But why does Major League Baseball? And I think what it means to Major League Baseball is if they can show that they pride the Heisman Trophy winner away from football to come play their sport, all of a sudden they have a little bit of momentum right now, because they do have a star problem. You have Manny Machado, you have Bryce Harper that have dominated headlines, you know, Mike Trout. There are big names out there, but there aren't that many you know, recognizable kind of up-and-coming players that start in the minor leagues. And this is the most notable name that we've seen that would go through the minor leagues and pick up momentum over the years and then be playing center field for Oakland, because they think that he is the center fielder of the future. Now, there have been reports that have come out, $15 million to keep him in baseball. A lot of those report has been talked down from Passan, from Susan Slusser, who covers the A's for MLB.com. Specific dollar amounts apparently haven't been discussed, but they can essentially sign him to a major league deal, which is a rule you weren't able to do before, and then give him an additional signing bonus just to keep him there. I feel like this is very unprecedented, and in Bud Selig's baseball world, that wouldn't have happened. I don't think so.
Is this the biggest tug of war between two sports when it comes to a big athlete, since Michael Jordan sort of dabbled in the Birmingham Barons, Chicago White Sox? I know the circumstances aren't exactly the same.
I think coming out of the draft, depending on who you ask, Jeff Samardzija, because he was going to be a first round pick. He was going to be a top 15 pick coming out of Notre Dame, but he decided to go play baseball and has had a fine career.
Kyler Murray is like a megastar. Jeff Samardzija was just a really good college football player. He didn't win the Heisman. He wasn't.
Yeah.
I mean, like,
he
Kyler Murray is gravitating.
Yeah.
And I just hope, Jordan, that Kyler Murray follows his heart, not necessarily the big bag of money. Just pick the sport that you really sincerely want to play.
Right.
I know you like both, and you're very good at both of them. But I think you're sort of doing a disservice if you just chase the big cash and make it a bidding war between the NFL and Major League Baseball.
And that's what it sounds like right now, that he is going to just... honestly, if he does this tonight, that doesn't mean he's going to full-fledged go NFL. He could still circle back. So this could be something where, you know, pretty much Oakland's just trying to cut it off right there.
And the ironic timing of the Cliff Kingsbury being hired and then everyone rolling back the tape from a few months ago of Cliff Kingsbury saying, if I had the number one pick, I would select Kyler Murray. And
that's
then, of course, Twitterverse
fans.
Just goes crazy. And then the logical people talk about how they're not trading Josh Rosen. It'd be a huge cap hit, blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
But it is kind of funny how all these dominoes sort of just fell right in a row when you're talking about Kingsbury and Kyler Murray and going pro, whatever sport he decides to go pro in.
Right.
Kingsbury now the head coach of the Cardinals. Interesting.
The other wrinkle in this is, in Major League Baseball, you draft a guy, you don't sign him in the first round, you get a compensatory pick. So in the case of the Diamondbacks many years ago, they had the third and seventh pick. It's because they didn't sign their sixth pick the year before. So you get the pick after the following year. That's what led to them getting Trevor Bauer and Archie Bradley in the same draft class. So it's not common to have multiple picks in the first round because you don't sign the guy from the year before. Actually, the Diamondbacks are going to have that this year because they didn't sign their first round pick this past year. If Kyler Murray decides to go to the NFL, technically he signed a deal. So that means that the A's would not get that compensatory pick. They would get the signing bonus back. They'd get the $4.5 million back, but they wouldn't get that pick. So that's just a whole other layer. Now, I know we're talking a lot about Oklahoma and Oakland right now. Why should Arizona Cardinals fans care about what's going on here? Because you have the number one pick and you have a bunch of holes that need to be filled within this roster. You could take number one overall, probably Nick Bosa, and then you have a tandem of Chandler Jones, Nick Bosa, all of a sudden it's like J.J. Watt and Jadeveon Clowney. That's worked out pretty well for Houston. But if you want to try to bring in a big haul of picks and try to address multiple spots in this draft, you trade down, probably stay within the top 10. I think there are a couple teams that would look for the first overall pick to potentially draft a quarterback. It's a thin year for quarterbacks, but you just want as much intrigue as you can get around this number one pick. Since it is a thin year, probably Dwayne Haskins and Kyler Murray. Todd McShay said, I think Kyler Murray is a first-round pick. I don't know if he's the number one overall pick. And a lot of that has to do with his height. He's 5'10". But we've seen Drew Brees, Russell Wilson, smaller quarterbacks get it done. And it only takes one quarterback or one team to want to go get that quarterback. And then they trade up. They're sending potentially multiple first four-round picks over the next couple of years. And all of a sudden, your roster's replenished. Some of those holes are starting to be filled up. And you can potentially maybe find that cornerback opposite Patrick Peterson. You can find people along the offensive line to protect Josh Rosen. So that could be something to look into when you have not a ton of quarterback options out there, but a couple that are first-round grades. Because when you look at it, Dwayne Haskins, Kyler Murray, whoever's going to try to trade or draft Haskins probably isn't going to go after the type of player that Kyler Murray is. Those are two very different systems that they would thrive in. But you have the Giants, you have the Jaguars, you have the Broncos, all in the top 10 that need quarterbacks. And it's not going to be so much the Giants because they can sit pretty, try to get a quarterback at number six, but it's when the Jaguars and the Broncos try to jump up, maybe all of a sudden we're cooking with something. Again, it might be a bit of a reach. We're early in this process. It might be a bit of a reach to try to go get a quarterback at number one with this thin class. They may want to wait for 2020, but just something to think about. And that's obviously something we're going to keep our eyes on over the next 3.5 months as we approach the NFL draft. Coming up next, we have Paula Bovin, the professor. We're going to talk all things Arizona sports with her and get her perspective. That's coming up next on the Brad Sessmatt Show. I have said it before, and I will say it again. If there was a badass magazine, our next guest would be on the cover each and every edition. Paula Bovin, former AZ Central columnist, now over at the Cronkite School, is here on the Brad Sessmatt Show here with Jordan Hamm. Paula, thanks so much for joining us.
I like that idea. Can we start up that magazine? That'd be awesome.
I feel like you have the manpower over at Cronkite to go ahead and get that started.
I'll see what I can do. I'll start working on it.
So obviously a lot going on here in the state, especially swirling around the Cardinals. Just what did you make of the hiring of Cliff Kingsbury as the Cardinals head coach?
You know, I liked it. I mean, maybe me more than some other people. I still really believe in their quarterback, Josh Rosen. You know, obviously it started out great. Things went south a little bit. But I think you need – this team needs to put a lot of attention on that. And obviously I think Kingsbury is great in that sense. I think, you know, everybody is obviously looking at the Sean McVay and how that went. Obviously very successful with the Rams. But the thing about that hire too is he not only worked great and did great things with Goff, but I think he had the right coaching staff around him. They really built up that offense so that they were, you know, addressing needs at wide receiver, addressing needs at tight end and things like that. So I like the hire because of what he can do with this offense, but I think there's still another step to it, Jordan, and that's making sure the right pieces are in place around him, because I think, you know, by the end of the season, Rosen was just, I think, mentally and physically beat up.
When you're looking at that staff and making those hires, just what sort of things do you think are necessary to make sure that Kingsbury is properly insulated with the right type of minds, especially not being having any experience at the NFL level?
Yeah, no, it's probably an obvious answer, but I think you've got to sort of complement him with experience. I know he brings this great mind offensively, the air raid offense and all that, but you've got to have people who have sort of done it. And, you know, I know that the Rams defense this season hasn't been what, especially lately, what some people thought, but when they brought in Wade Phillips, they brought in somebody like a defensive coordinator who knew what he was doing and who had been around the block and who kind of knows how things are run. I mean, I think you've got to have that complement of experience and someone who's run and been around an NFL team. I don't think a staff of just a bunch of young bucks is going to work.
I was surprised when they started to make this change at the national response of Steve Wilks not receiving enough time. Do you feel like he was given a proper opportunity to be the Cardinals head coach and kind of get his message across?
No, I mean, I think I don't think 1 year is fair to anybody in any sport. But the reality is, with how much people make these days, how much money is at stake, salaries for players, you know, revenue streams and suites and all that, it's not surprising to me. So while is it fair? No, because I don't think you can show your identity in one season as coaching. I also think that the reality is what have you done for me lately kind of world. And so while I don't think it was necessarily fair, I'm not surprised. And I just think I don't think there's any room for patience, especially in professional sports anymore.
Looking across the league, a familiar face popped up in Tampa Bay and Bruce Arians. I know that you covered him extensively when he was with the Cardinals. What jumped out to you about him coming out of retirement after just 1 year and taking this opportunity with the Buccaneers?
Yeah, you know, great question. I mean, a couple things came to mind. One, I wasn't surprised because you find so many, whether it's players or coaches, when they leave the sport, it is really hard to find things in your life that matches that sort of high of coaching or playing. I think it's such a rude awakening for many professional athletes and coaches to live your life a different way. You know, you think how fun it might be to go around and fish and do what you want all the time, but I think that charge you get out of coaching, is the adrenaline rush, is so hard to compare. And so I'm not surprised that he went back. There was a little me that had to wonder if, and I know that he said that's not the case and other have as well, but you know, did he sour a little bit on something with the Cardinals? Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, I think there's going to always be that thing at the back of everyone's mind about it.
I know that you wrote a column in 2016 when he was having kind of his health scares that you felt a little bit culpable about, you know, everything he was going through. Did any of that resonate when you saw he was getting back into coaching?
Yeah, no, without question, because I think, you know, it's a hard business, and the expectations and to be successful, you've got to give up almost your whole life to this coaching thing. You know, we hear the guys sleeping on couches and everything else. And I know many more coaches are paying better attention to their health, especially some of the young guys, I think, coming in, but it is not easy. So absolutely, because I remember, you know, and his wife even talked about how it was important for him to be healthy and to maybe not have some of the stresses that he had before. I think they're coming back. You know, yeah. I don't think you can get rid of the stresses if you're in professional sports. Mm-hmm.
We spent a lot of time in this last segment talking about Kyler Murray and what he could do, whether he goes baseball, you know, NFL, the intricacies of everything that comes with it. Just what was your thought when you heard that he could be entering the NFL draft and obviously having the Heisman season that he did, but also was the 9th overall pick for the Oakland A's?
I just, you know, my initial thought was just good for him. I mean, he's put himself in a position to have two leagues covet him. And if it's going to come sort of down to, you know, signing bonuses or whatever, more power to him. You know, I think he's just put himself in a fantastic position, and I sort of understand what the A's are doing. And, you know, I'm hearing like something like $15 million now that there's talk about what they can get him. Good for him. You know, he's a great athlete who has put himself in a position to be coveted by two leagues. And so, you know, I don't know how many athletes athletes we'll see do this, so I'm kind of enjoying watching it.
It's been an interesting Pac-12 basketball season. ASU obviously got off to a hot start, but has seemed to cool off similarly to what they did last year. Just when you look at the conference as a whole, what's really jumped out, especially with ASU and U of A?
I think U of A, kind of watch out. I mean, they're starting to look better the last few games that I've seen them, and I think that's going to be a really interesting storyline. ASU is so interesting to me. I don't know what their identity is yet. I thought I kind of had a handle on it early on, and it was pretty exciting, but, you know, I think they're still trying to find their identity. I think to a certain extent, Bobby Hurley is sort of finding his identity as far as making in-game adjustments and things like that. And, you know, I still sort of consider him a young coach. I mean, he obviously was a great player, and he's coached in college, but I still feel a little bit like he's finding his way as a college coach. Still think he's the right hire. I think he's good for this program, but I don't think this team has figured out its identity yet. And, you know, the good news for them is that the Pac-12 is having its own issues as far as basketball. So I think that, you know, they might have some time to work this out.
Mm-hmm. Paula, we appreciate the time as always. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure, Jordan.
That is Paula Bovin, former AZ Central columnist, college football playoff committee member, and like I said, all around badass. It was interesting what she brought up with ASU basketball, because at the beginning of the year, I said on this very show that they are a tournament team. I was confident in that, and I still am. But when you look at the way the conference has played as of late, and they're barely able to get one or two teams in the top 25, those are some razor-thin margins. So when you're splitting a weekend in the Bay Area against Cal, who's arguably the worst team in the Pac-12, which is saying something, and then a sneaky good Stanford team, but I felt like the depth that they had could have counteracted that. But like Paula said, I feel like that the team really had this identity from the get-go, and you saw that against some really good teams. And even in the Kansas game, they didn't necessarily play all that well, but they found ways to win. And now they just kind of looked a little lost out there. I was, with the Princeton game, I was at the Utah game, and it just looked kind of like they didn't quite have that go-to guy. And I think to start the year, that was Dort. But now that he's kind of has gone through some growing pains, which any freshman's going to do, he's still an incredible talent. They were kind of looking around at some of these players, trying to find the go-to guy. And there are a lot of leaders on this team, but it's just kind of who's going to take over on the court. You have Zylan Cheatham, who's kind of that vocal leader and can fill up the stat sheet in so many different ways. You have Remy Martin, who's kind of just that scrappy, kind of undersized guy who's just going to make the life difficult for the opponents. Rob Edwards, who is not afraid to pull the trigger and has made some really big shots in the season so far. But I just feel like there needs to kind of be that alpha male, and I'm not sure which one is that alpha male on that team. But again, I still think they're a tournament team. I think they have plenty of time to right the ship, especially if they have a strong showing in Vegas. I think that the committee will look at what they've been able to accomplish. But like last year, they went 500 in conference play. You can't do that. You need to have a couple of sweeps here. And it's a big weekend against the Oregon schools. Oregon State is, I think, surprising a lot of people. And Oregon, before they had a couple key injuries, they were the favorites within the conference. So I think that they can really make some noise and show what they can do. But it's going to definitely take a lot for a big weekend here in the Pac-12. Coming up next, we have Justin Spears of the Tucson Daily Star and ESPN Tucson. This guy is everywhere. We're going to talk U of A hoops and football. That's coming up next on the Brad Sessmatt Show. Welcome back to the Brad Sessmatt Show. I'm Jordan Hamm. A lot of stuff going on right now within the NFL. Steve Wilks, we talked about him in the previous segment with Paula Bovin. Looks like he's going to be signing as the defensive coordinator of the Cleveland Browns under Freddie Kitchens' staff. And this is a staff that's really starting to come together. Todd Monken will be the offensive coordinator. Stump Mitchell, who I think a lot of people saw the work that he did with David Johnson when David Johnson broke out. He's going to be the running backs coach, and there's a lot of talent in that backfield. So I think that there can be a, you know, the Browns are I can't believe I'm saying this, but they're making some moves and might be here to stay.
They're an up-and-coming franchise, and when could you say that about the Cleveland Browns? I mean, the way they finished last season, to think they had a chance to be 500 after winning, what, one game in the last 2 years, I believe?
Yeah.
It's amazing what happens when you have a quarterback, a competent quarterback.
And it's crazy, because with the draft, they had the 1 and 4 pick. And I think no matter the combination, no one was thinking they were going to go Baker Mayfield and Denzel Ward.
No.
But it worked. It's worked
no,
out
it
one
did.
Season.
No, absolutely.
Denzel Ward has been a great cornerback. And honestly, they should, the Cardinals fans should thank the Browns if you're a Josh Rosen fan, because Denzel Ward was taken in that 4, I think that Bradley Chubb was taken by the Broncos, and that just opened everything up for the Cardinals to go get
right.
Josh Rosen. So
and they traded for Jarvis Landry, which turned out to be a really good deal, and they have Myles Garrett. I mean, they have the pieces in place at the key positions, and now you just need to build around that. And they're in a division, Jordan. The Bengals are way down. The Steelers are still the Steelers, but they're okay. And the Ravens are a good team, but it's not like that division is that good.
The Steelers' big three, who's happy among those big three right now?
The big three might be the Big Ben solo next year. So.
And Big Ben is, what, he's been doing this since
long 03? Time. Long, as long as Philip Rivers.
And him, Eli Manning, Philip Rivers. That is crazy. So that's what's going on with the Browns, but Steve Wilks gets a new home. I think it's a great move for him. That's a good defense that Greg Williams was able to really get the most out of. I think that he's going to be able to have a similar effect for those guys as well.
And Wilks clearly is still a well-respected defensive voice. I mean, it did not take him long to land on his feet. This is not a situation where, like, Todd Graham gets fired and he kind of just hangs out and is hoping to get another job, and here we are a year later and he's still kind of hoping to get another job. I mean, Wilkes got gobbled up relatively quickly in the process.
Yeah.
So good for him.
Yeah. And so that's the moves of the day so far within the NFL, still waiting for that offensive coordinator position to be filled by the Cardinals. And while we were talking about the Cardinals, I had a thought about the cornerback position opposite Patrick Peterson. What position group is more testy for Arizona sports fans? The cornerback opposite Patrick Peterson or the backup point guard to Steve Nash? I felt like those are the two positions for the past however many years. That was the position they could not fill, and it felt like they were, you know, a step away. For at least with the Suns, it was like if they can find a nice backup point guard, they're a step away from the NBA title.
Which seemed like such an easy fix. I mean, you're not looking for a star point guard. You're just looking for a competent
where there's not a
guard.
Major drop-off. And Leandro Barbosa kind of served as that, but he was more of a scoring guard.
Right.
But I remember the Marcus Bankses that came in.
Yes.
I feel like that's the same thing happening right now with Patrick Peterson. The cornerback position opposite Patrick Peterson. They've had some guys who have had success, but not consistent success. But every time I'm reading draft needs for the past 5 years, it's, well, they're going away from Patrick Peterson, so they're targeting this cornerback. If they can find another cornerback, all of a sudden their pass defense is incredible. So I feel like that is the two angsty position groups here in Arizona sports in recent memory. Who knows? Maybe it'll be now first base for the Diamondbacks. You never really know. Special thanks to Paula Bovin, Eric Sorensen, and Jared Nielsen, of course, on the other side of the glass, making sure everything goes as planned. Appreciate you guys tuning in to the Brad Sesmatt Show, and come right back same time, same place tomorrow.